Welcome to episode 99 of Frank Reactions, the podcast where we help you profit from the digital era through better customer experiences online and off. My name is Tema Frank, and this episode could also be called the Meat Lovers episode. You'll find out why in a moment. Before I get there, though, just a little heads up. I recorded this at a Marketing Research and Intelligence Association meeting a few weeks back, but didn't get a chance to record the intro and conclusion at that point. So you'll notice that the sound is a little bit different from normal because I'm actually recording this one from a lovely little apartment hotel room in Cape Town, South Africa, where I've had the privilege of speaking at the Seamless Africa conference last week and have been having an amazing time exploring this wonderful part of the world in the days since that conference. The episode is also a little different because it does a bit of a deep dive on market research, which, of course, is a vitally important aspect of customer experience. I mean, you can't create great customer experiences without understanding your customers, and you get that kind of deep understanding from marketing research. So in this episode, I interview Barry Davis, who is an associate vice president at Leger Research, and president of the Alberta chapter of the Marketing Research and Intelligence Association. And we discuss a case study that his company did on how people buy meat. In this case study, you'll see both the value and some of the challenges of marketing research. In this particular case, what they were intrigued by was what respondents were telling them was important to how they chose what meat to buy seemed to contradict actual buyer behavior. And I mean, it's like they were buying meat. They weren't buying weird, kinky sexual devices or something where they might have a reason to want to say something different from what they really wanted to try. So we discussed different approaches that were used to try to get at the truth of why customers were behaving as they were. And that involves discussion of different types of survey modeling and question types. So a bit of a deep dive, I guess, on the market research side, although, you know, even if market research isn't your thing, if you like meat, this episode should get your juices flowing. I'll chat with you briefly at the end of the interview.
I'm Barry Davis. I'm an associate vice president at Leger, the Research Intelligence Group.
Okay.
I'm also the president of the MRIA Alberta chapter, and I've been working on the board here for a number of years in communications.
Today, you talked to us about a project that was done on people's attitudes towards buying meat. So first of all, can you give us sort of a high-level overview of what you were doing? And then I'll dig into some more questions.
We were commissioned to do this work on behalf of ALMA, the Alberta Livestock and Meat Agency. And as a sort of final hurrah as their mandate was wrapping up. So it was important for them to have a project that added value to the research they had done in previous years. What I wanted to address both in this research and in my presentation today was how we can go beyond a simple tracking survey where we look at results year over year to add new material and to dig deeper to answer questions that have been raised in previous rounds of the research.
Well, and I thought that was something really interesting you said in the questions and answers, is that when you're doing a tracking survey, each round raises new questions. Can you elaborate on that? Like, what sort of questions?
Well, in this survey, one of the questions that came up was when we saw that Costco was a store that was really increasing in sales consistently over time. Mm-hmm. And yet, we were looking at factors that had been identified in the research telling us that things like selection of different package sizes,
and this was for meat,
was just important for people. And this study was about specifically about fresh meat.
Okay.
And so when we thought about Costco, and when the previous researchers thought about it, they thought, well, Costco is all about buying this bulk package. This is the size of package we have. This is the brand of meat it is. And that's the one you get to put in your cart. Mm-hmm. So it didn't reconcile. what people are telling us about what was important to them and where they were shopping. So to answer that question, we had to look at why people shop at their main store.
Okay.
And to really see, rather than how people rate Costco versus how they rate Superstore or something else, why do they choose their main store the way they do?
Okay.
And that led us to a very different finding, which was that most of all, people shop for fresh meat at Costco for quality, followed by price.
Which is interesting that Costco has managed to create this quality image of its meats, even though it is known as a bulk purchase store. So I don't know in reality how much that is true versus just perception that they've created.
Yes, and I don't know, it's hard for us to tell from a study like this that's done online what the customer experience is like and how that plays out with that. So is it something about how their packages look?
Yeah.
Or is it something about how they're displayed, perhaps when their bulk packages present the meat in a different way?
Mm-hmm.
Or it could even be that people can see, I've noticed when I'm at Costco, I can see people working behind the glass and I can see what they're doing. And it may be the transparency of that. So there may be all kinds of reasons that we don't know why people have this perception. But what we learned is people are, by whatever reasons, shopping at Costco for quality.
Hmm.
It was a really new finding for this project.
So another thing you commented on is that when it comes to buying fresh meat, people have a whole bunch of different criteria, all of which are ranked very, very important. And first of all, can you give some examples of what are those different things that are all ranked as highly important?
So if you think about what you might consider when you buy meat, and it might not even be a conscious process.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, these must-have factors are givens. We assume we wouldn't even be looking at it if we were thinking it was suspect. So I want to buy meat that's safe to eat. I want to
yes.
buy meat that tastes good. Mm-hmm. It's not overly tough. So there's a lot of different factors I might be looking for. The challenge when you're researching that is that one of the ways of researching importance is ask people to rate things on a scale. So if you say on a 1 to 10 scale, how do you rate it being important that your meat is safe to eat? Well, I'm going to say a 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
If there was an 11, I'm going to put that.
Right.
So if they say, well, how important is the meat taste good? Well, again, I'm going to put a 10. And this
what would
problem.
Happen if you did a rank ordering as opposed to 1 to 10?
So if we did a rank order, and there's a lot of different ways that we can sort of compare choices and do rankings, but ultimately you're telling people they have to choose
something that's non-negotiable.
something that's not negotiable, and I'm trying to rank things that where there's none of them I could live without.
Right. So it means that your survey data is useless then.
Yes, and I think we'd just end up with a whole bunch of don't knows or
yes.
people exiting out the survey. So,
okay.
So that could be another problem with that. I think as well, they may sort of force themselves to make what might be an arbitrary choice, and then mm-hmm. what we're getting aren't real results.
Right.
So to tackle that, we presented a few different a number of different types of meat as well, cuts of meat, and related them to each other. We asked people to rate all those different cuts of different meats on different qualities, and such as tasting good, being moist, being tender, being easy to prepare. And so that gave us a really good understanding of how people perceive these different meats.
Mm-hmm.
The second step was then we related that to their meat purchase. So
mm-hmm.
we could say, for those people who purchase, let's say, whole chickens,
mm-hmm.
what kinds of things were they, what were they saying about those whole chickens that was compelling for them? So we would then learn, okay, maybe a whole chicken is something that's a good meal to cook for the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really started to understand this profile and be able to link it to why they chose the cuts of meat that they did.
Okay. And then ultimately from this data, you developed essentially buyer personas. You developed category segments of customers that had markedly different views about what to buy and what they would pay for. Can you comment a little bit about what those were and what was different about them?
Yes, and it was a very interesting part of the study is that we know, while we get an overall picture of results, that within that there are different groups that have different preferences. And so one of those was what we would call coupon clippers. And these were at the obviously affordable end of the spectrum, tend to be sort of middle-aged female skew, and tend to be at lower incomes, perhaps a single parent. And they were literally shopping for price, shopping at stores like No Frills, where price is really the only reason to shop there, mm-hmm. and really not looking for any particular value-added attributes in what they were buying. Another segment is the convenience seekers, which this was a much younger segment, tends to be that sort of 20s-year-olds and skewed to male. And these are people where they're looking for something that's already prepared, it's already, whatever it is, rotisserie chicken that's already cooked and hot and ready to eat, or something you can throw in the microwave and 5 minutes later you're having dinner.
Sounds like my 20-something son.
Yeah. So those people, something interesting in them, about them is they're not very price sensitive. Right. They're also not really very picky in terms of trading off different attributes for each other.
It's all about, can I get it at the store across the street, and is it ready?
Exactly.
Okay.
And then you've got what we call the healthy empty nesters. And these are people, if you imagine the person who's sort of in their 50s, 60s, or older, and they just had a visit with their doctor and got a message, you have to start working out and eating better starting right now. And that's where they're coming from, is to think about what is the healthiest way they can eat. They're worried about things like additives in their foods, mm-hmm. So that's how they're doing their shopping. It's not a very attractive segment. I would say it's the least attractive segment for the meat industry,
yeah.
Because that's one of the main ways they're trying to accomplish that. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you've got the affluent meat eaters, which, as we tried to define in its name, this is really the cash cow for the meat industry. These are people where there's no chance that their meat eating is going down. It's stable or going up. Mm-hmm. They're willing to pay more for quality, so they may pay more for things like certified Angus, or if there was such a certification, certified tender, and looking for good experiences. They tend to be families, maybe middle-aged or a bit younger, and tend to like nights out, and so they're definitely a valuable segment. The final segment is the trendsetting professionals, which tends to be a sort of nearing retirement segment. They may have either have kids who left home, or they might be teenagers or sort of young adults living at home, and they're entering a point in their life where they have some more disposable income. Even though their salaries might not be the highest of all the groups that we looked at, there's a duality in this segment that, yeah. While there's these people that are this age and they're following the trends, there's also a lot of younger people sort of in their 20s or early 30s that would be in this segment as well. They're getting started in their careers. They don't have a lot of kids or responsibilities, and so they're following the trends. They're spending a little more money on mm-hmm. some of those extra attributes.
One of the other things that I thought was interesting in what you were talking about was the importance, if you come up with a finding, like the Costco one you talked about, where we would assume it's about price, and yet people, the attributes they were saying were important weren't what Costco seemed to be offering. You talked about the importance of using multiple methods to try and answer that same question. So you tested in different ways to try and get at that answer, if I understood correctly.
In the previous study that was done on this on these topics, there was a conjoint exercise which involves trading off a number of different packages against each other to say, if, for example, if we show you 12 packages of different, maybe the same cut of meat, but all with different attributes and different prices, which package would you choose? And going right. through these exercises to see what features stand out, what seems to drive your decision. And so in the past study, they found that Canadian origin seemed to be a very important factor.
And in case we've got U.S. listeners, this was a survey conducted in Canada.
Right. So we wanted to validate that. It was a big conclusion to be making. And we thought, looking at the question, when you've got a number of different things that people are trying to choose from, we weren't sure how that would exactly work. It wasn't a technique that we had tried before, so we thought it would be helpful to validate this using asking the question a different way. Mm-hmm. So we used what was called a discrete choice model to compare three packages at a time. One difference that we did compared to the previous study, in the previous study they asked people, they basically ascertained in their model how much people would be willing to pay for these different attributes. So for example, how many dollars extra would people pay for organic meat versus this other similar package where it's non-organic? Mm-hmm. With our study, we started out by doing a market survey, price shopping, to see what range of prices was in reality
right.
reflected in the stores. So there was a very different way of approaching it and making sure that...
Because I have no idea. When I go shopping for meat, because I don't buy it all the time, I have no idea what it should cost. If you asked me in a survey, I wouldn't be able to tell you. But I look at what it is relative to the other stuff on the shelf.
Right. And when you start, especially when you start combining attributes and saying, well, here's something where it's organic and it has no hormones and it's grass-fed and, you know, how is the price going to compare to this other thing, which is it's not organic and it's made in the U.S. and it's... you know, maybe some it may have another positive attribute the other one doesn't have, and so
right.
you're trying to figure out what price you would pay for this. It's very difficult. So if you let's say we make them one higher price than the other, mm-hmm. if they pick the lower price one, well, then we know all those attributes don't really matter. They're just picking on price.
Well, and that was my first thought when you showed at the very beginning. What are the stores that are seeing most of the meat purchases now, and it tends to be stores that are selling them at lower prices. So it seems that price is outweighing convenience for the majority of people. At least that's what it looked like.
Well, and overall, I think it's a fair thing to say, and that's the reason why we drilled down into these different segments, because we certainly, if you talk about everyone across the board, more people are doing price shopping.
Yeah.
If you start looking at these segments and different groups, well, then all of a sudden you have groups of people that are behaving similarly to each
right.
other, and some of those are actually paying premiums, particularly when you're providing certain attributes. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought something that was very interesting is that some of these segments are actually quite price sensitive, but yet they're also willing to pay more premiums for additional attributes such as... grain fed, for example. Or, so it was really telling me about the difference between affordability and value.
Ah, good right?
because,
point.
Because
yes.
when you're paying more a premium for an additional attribute,
yep.
well, you're still maybe getting just as much or maybe even better value for the money.
That
so I think,
is
so
a great
I think people,
point.
It really rang through that people. And I think Costco, one of the reasons that they're doing as well as they are is because it's not necessarily that they're the cheapest, but people think they're getting quality
for their
for
money.
For a good price.
That's interesting. And that makes sense. So you showed a chart that talked about how much extra or how much less people will pay for different attributes. And you were surprised, for instance, and again, apologies to U.S. listeners, but I'm sure you'd find the same is true in reverse about U.S. versus Canadian, that Canadian meat shoppers will pay a premium for knowing that it's Canadian meat that they're buying. Your data showed that they would actually rather buy no-name meat, not knowing where it comes from, than meat from that's designated as U.S. meat. Now, only by a very small amount, just want to let people know that, but that is an interesting conclusion. What are your thoughts on that? Is it because we've become more patriotic, or there's a perception that Canadian meat would be higher quality?
Well, we did ask some other questions in our survey about the quality of Canadian meat, particularly from a standards perspective. And people at least have the perception in Canada that there are higher standards here. For the sake of the study, we included the U.S. as another country of origin for the purpose of making choices, just because it's tends to be our main training partner.
Right.
But certainly we could have put other countries in there as well. It's clear that Canadians believe that we have standards that go beyond what is and happens in other countries. Now, the exception to that was when we looked at lamb, we saw that New Zealand actually scored quite high as well.
And so it was
clear that New Zealand had a strong brand for lamb.
And I guess the buying something that doesn't say the country of origin, they may just assume that it's local without having it drawn to their attention that it isn't.
Yes, they could. And so it may be that they're hoping, or they don't think about it, and they just assume if there's no label that it would be of Canadian origin. That's possible. And it certainly doesn't command the same kind of premium as it would if they had stated that. So it really shows, whether you're in Canada or anywhere else, how much importance there are in communicating your standards, as well as making sure that that communication's on the label.
And so this comes to marketing. From a marketing perspective, so we're saying marketing that it is from Canada is something that's going to help sell the stuff. The other thing that I thought was really interesting is, while people aren't willing to pay the massive premium that's commanded for something labeled organic, they will pay a premium for something that doesn't have antibiotics or hormones. And you were commenting that even though that may be legislated, so all the meat is like that, people don't know it. And so from a marketing perspective, the meat producers should really be marketing the fact hormone-free, antibiotic-free. They can use that as a way of charging more money for it.
Absolutely. And we can see how A&W, as an example, has done a great job, really, of capitalizing on that. And whether or not they need to do that or have any choice in the matter, it's something they advertise a lot and something that clearly people are buying into.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's probably it for my questions. Did you have anything you wish I had asked you and I didn't?
Nope.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, I'd say now it's time to go off and grill a big, juicy steak, whether you bought it at Costco or somewhere else. As I mentioned, I'm recording the wrap-up to this episode from Cape Town, South Africa, where customer experience is still a pretty new field. I've managed to snag some fascinating interviews that you'll be able to hear over the coming weeks with people who are in the vanguard of customer experience in this part of the world. Also, just wanted to give you a quick heads up. If you're contemplating going to B2B Online 2017 in Chicago, May 8th to 10th, you can get a 25% discount by using the code, all capital letters, B17TF, as in Tema Frank. So B2B17TF, and that'll get you 25% off your registration at B2B Online, which is taking place May 8th to 10th in Chicago. And last I checked on the website, they actually had a form there where if you click to get some more details about the conference, you'd be entered to win a $200 gift card. So if you're thinking about going, maybe go check that out right now. I look forward to talking to you again in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, I would love to hear your feedback on this or any other episode, as well as your suggestions for people that you would like me to interview or topics that you'd like me to cover. You can reach me, as always, by sending an email to Tema, T-E-M as in marketing A, at frankreactions.com, or sending a tweet to @TemaFrank, or contacting me on LinkedIn or through the Frank Reactions Facebook page. Chat with you again soon. Bye.